Today on Maine Calling, The Art of the Memoir, an encore presentation. These days, memoirs are a mainstay on most nonfiction bestseller lists. But why are they so popular? Is it because we're all voyeuristic on some level? Or are we enriched and transformed by learning different perspectives? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we listen back to our earlier exploration of the world of memoirs, both reading and writing them. Our guests today, all successful memoir authors, help us to understand what it takes to elevate one's personal story into something magic, something other people want to read. We'll find out what publishers are looking for if you are hoping to monetize your story, and we will share some of our favorite recent memoirs. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org. And by Verrill, committed to delivering trusted legal services in Maine and throughout the Northeast for 163 years. Learn more at verrill-law.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Visit any bookstore, and you're almost certain to see memoirs right up front, displayed prominently. They are popular. Today, we'll discuss why and what makes a memoir compelling. My guest today, Alyssa Altman, who is author of Permission, The New Memoirist and the Courage to Create. Maureen Stanton, author of The Murmur of Everything Moving. And Catherine Miles, a journalist and author of many books, including Trailed, Quakeland, and Superstorm. Welcome to all of you. And I think I'm going to start with the big question. Kate, I'll give it to you first. Why are memoirs so popular, do you think? And why now? You know, when I'll date myself here, but when I was growing up, memoirs weren't really a thing. And now I looked up the New York Times bestseller list, hardcover list. Seven of the top 10 are memoirs. Why?
That's a great question. And I think it really comes down to why we read. You know, we're always just sort of looking for validation for our own experiences. We're looking to find that people have experienced the same sorts of heartache or problem or joy or discovery that we have. And I think memoir is so good at showing us that we're not alone in the world, that people have gone through sometimes some really sort of tragic experiences and come out the other side with new insight. And I think that gives us all hope and solace and a sense of community in an increasingly sort of divisive world.
All right. Alyssa, I see you nodding. Anything to add to that?
No, I think it's, as Catherine just said, you know, it's the great leveler. It makes us who we are. Stories. We are the storytelling species. That's what we do. And there's nothing so amazing as reading a memoir written by someone with whom you share no experience and being so drawn into it that that's the humanity is the binding factor.
Maureen.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. I think that people are craving connection, and memoir is a very intimate form, and you are brought and transported into someone else's life to an experience you may never have had. I think it expands our world and our knowledge. I read a lot of memoir. I read mostly memoir, and I read it because I want to learn about other people's lives and be connected to those very, essential human aspects of our life that we all share. Loss and grieving and love and desire and all of those things.
And you use the word connectedness, Maureen, and I'm wondering if you're thinking that the reason that they're more popular now is that, you know, there's been so much written about how we're less connected than we used to be in our day-to-day lives.
Yeah, I think of memoir as having a conversation. I remember growing up, the mothers in the neighborhood would be at the clothesline talking to each other, sharing their stories. And I think we got away from that simple, ordinary connection between each other. We're on our devices. And a memoir allows you to really feel somebody else's experience and flex those muscles of empathy that we all need to practice more, I think.
Mm. Alyssa, you know, everyone on this panel has written a memoir, and I'm thinking about the word intimate that Maureen just used, that a memoir is something that's intimate. I think intimate can also be, I mean, maybe not a synonym, but in the same family as the word vulnerable. And mm-hmm. somebody has to make themselves vulnerable, don't they, to write a memoir that matters. If you don't go too deep, if you don't go there, it's not really going to work, is it?
No. And, you know, I mean, I think that that's certainly sort of the, you know, a basic, the basic truth about memoir is that it is vulnerable making, and we have to put ourselves out there. I'm the author of 3 memoirs, including this one. And, you know, every time I have something come out, I'm like, oh my God, did I just say what I just thought I said, you know? But without that, there's sometimes a disconnect.
Mm. And you coach people, Alyssa, and you've actually written about that very thing, right? You know,
yeah,
helping people
yeah,
get no, there and giving them permission, right?
Yeah. I mean, I teach widely courses, workshops about permission and story ownership. And, you know, that's sort of the elephant in the room for writers at every memoirist at every level, new and seasoned. You know, they get to a point and they think, oh, but I can't possibly tell the core of the story because so-and-so is going to hear it. So-and-so is going to read about it. I don't want to ruffle any feathers. It's a great family secret, you know, or fill in the blank. And then the question becomes, how do we get past that to actually tell the stories that we need to tell?
And Catherine, you have done that. You've talked about things that were really horrifying that happened to you. You've written about them. Tell me about that decision-making process to reveal that and to write about it in what became a best-selling book.
Thanks. Yeah. You know, for me, when I'm talking to students, I always say it's like taking off your skin, right? And being willing to show everybody sort of the guts and the muscle and the connective tissue and everything. And for me, I'm always sort of asking about what's at stake and what's on the other side. And when I first wrote about being sexually assaulted as a teenager, I wrote it during the Kavanaugh hearings. And for me, it was a decision where I felt like if I was willing to share my story, if I could reach a place where I felt like I could be brave enough to share my story, I might empower or maybe inspire other people to share their stories as well. And when I think about my very favorite memoirs, it's those people who are willing to show those kind of not ugly, but kind of hidden, scary sides of themselves. Amy Irving is one of my very favorite writers. She writes very poignantly about dealing with postpartum depression, postpartum psychosis, things like that, that I think a lot of people aren't willing to talk about. And when, as writers, we're willing to step forward and start telling those stories, I think what we're really doing is laying the groundwork for a much larger and much more needed conversation about things that maybe don't get discussed at dinner parties and should.
Mm. And Catherine, I'm wondering if you're willing to share, what kind of reaction did you have? Did you have readers reach out to you and talk to you about and react to what you shared?
I did. And that was really good. I mean, you know, it sometimes comes with a cost. And I think we have to be really honest about that. There are times when writing about deeply personal things, family things can come at a cost of those relationships and might need some repair there. And so that's something I think we have to be aware of. But for me, I'm always looking for ways in which my writing can somehow do some good, can create an ethic of care, can have an advocacy component to it. And so for me, that's how I justify those potential expenses.
And to note, both Maureen and Alyssa are nodding away. Maureen, talk about that decision between the good you might do, the benefit of sharing versus those other people who would be in that memoir who may not be so happy about this story being told.
I think that is a peril of memoir, that all memoirs deal with at one point or another. I think the best thing to do for writers who are starting out wanting to write a memoir, and advice that I give all the time to students, is to write the first draft as if no one is ever going to see it. It's just for you. And in that way, you can allow that intuitive process to bubble up to the surface, that insight comes, you can be very honest and authentic. And then much later in the process, think about what you need to do, both to protect your relationships that you are concerned about with family members, and also to protect yourself legally from, you know, invasion of privacy and other sort of issues that can come up with memoir writing. But I think what memoir does really well is break taboos on silence on issues. And I think it's really can serve as witness narratives. And we've seen this through history and memoirs. And I think that putting yourself, making yourself vulnerable on the page is a first step in other people feeling safe to do so as well.
Alyssa.
Yeah, you know, the impetus behind my writing this book, Permission, is exactly what, you know, Maureen and Catherine are talking about. I mean, I wrote my first memoir in 2013, and there was an innocuous bit of information, what I thought was innocuous bit of information in it. And I never knew it was a deep family secret because it was talked about in my home all the time. The book came out, this is 2013, and 6 months later, I had lost that side of my family. And to this day, I do not have a relationship with them suddenly. So the costs, the potential costs of writing memoir, of writing deeply personal stories, they can be high, you know, they can be high. And we have to understand, as writers, we have to understand that we bear a responsibility for some of what happens as a result of writing a memoir, but not everything that happens. And, you know, Maureen's point about, well, how do you get past the elephant in the room, is a great advice, to write, you know, write a first draft as if no one is looking at it. Very often my students will come to me and they'll say, you know, I've got this first draft, I don't know what to do. And my question is, do you have a publisher yet? You know, do you have a publisher yet, or do you have an agent? And the answer very often is no. And so I try and explain, you know, it's not a great idea to put the cart before the horse. Or is it the horse before the cart? The cart before the horse, I think it is. And to actually get the words down and get the story down first, and then move into issues of permission. Do I have a right to tell the story? Is the story mine? What are the reactions going to be? You know, my personal story was an extreme reaction. What happened? I don't think that happens a lot.
Catherine, is there any benefit to writing a memoir that's not intended to be published? Is there just something for going through the exercise and writing about something that meant a lot to you in your life, whether it was trauma or something that's not a trauma, but for some reason important to you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, there's a big difference between writing for ourselves and writing for an audience. I think that a lot of times memoir begins with, for instance, journal writing. And that's, again, just very personal. It's that processing. It's that way of dealing with grief or trauma or things like that. And for some people, that's enough. You know, I think when we're talking about memoir as a publishable form, what we really need to be talking about is, how do we take those very particular individual experiences and universalize them, right? So, you know, it's sort of a cold, hard fact that just because your family story means a lot to you and your family, it may not be the case that it means a lot to the 5 to 20,000 people that a commercial publisher is going to want to buy the book and pay $30 on a hardcover version of it. And so there's that question of the so what, right? The, okay, you had this experience, but why is it going to be relevant to people who either didn't have that exact experience or don't necessarily identify with the particulars of yours. And so I think the real challenge, especially for first-time writers, is finding that universal and finding the way in which they can tell their story in a way that will really resonate with readers who have never met them and maybe not had that experience themselves.
Mm. I'm wondering if you could sort of walk me through, and I'm going to go back to you, Catherine. This is maybe something a publisher has said to you or some insights you can share. Have you ever pitched something where the publisher's like, nah, that's been done or that's not going to fly?
Well, you know, it's interesting that this sort of two person in the narrative is really important. So there's the person who's going through the experience, the I who's having the experience. But memoir really requires us to have another eye, the narrator that's already been through the experience and is able to reflect back on it. And when I first pitched the memoir that I'm working on right now to my editor, you know, she was like, where are you in this? Like, I feel like I'm reading this in real time and it's too much. I need you to have that healthy distance that shows you that it shows us all that you've processed it, that you can look back, that you can reflect, that you have something you can share with other readers based on that experience. And I think that's why sometimes you hear the advice that a certain amount of time has to pass before you're able to do that reflection. And I think that amount of time changes and it's different for different people, but we have to be able to answer that so what when we're writing.
And Maureen, your memoir is something that happened in your life a long time ago, right?
Yeah, it was in the late 80s, but I just want to circle back on that question about the value of writing memoir for people who may not want to publish it. And there have been studies done that show that life writing or journaling or writing your memoir has been very therapeutic for veterans and people struggling with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. So I think there is a value to doing that. It's very cathartic. But yeah, my memoir happened quite a long time ago. I wrote it actually quite a long time ago, and it was not up to me that it took 25 years to get it published. I had two other books published between that. And it's just the vicissitudes of the publishing industry of what they're interested in at the time.
Interesting.
Yeah, that double eye that Kate is talking about is that reflective layer where you're going back into your raw material, your experience in your life, and you're looking at it from a distance now and trying to find some kind of insight or understanding. I think that's what makes the bridge from the personal to the universal.
We do need to go to a break, but as we go to a break, I'm going to read a couple emails with recommendations. An email from Kayla. My favorite recent memoir is Educated by Tara Westover, an incredible story about growing up in an abusive, isolated family and pursuing her education. Her perseverance is so inspiring. And then from Sharon, my favorite memoir is the audiobook of Trevor Noah's Born a Crime. He reads it and brings the story to life. We're going to take a quick break. We're talking about memoirs on Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, all about memoirs and what makes a good one. My guests today are Kate Miles, who's a journalist and author whose recent book is Trailed: One Woman's Quest to Solve the Shenandoah Murders. Maureen Stanton is author of The Murmur of Everything Moving, and Alyssa Altman, author of Permission, The New Memoirist and the Courage to Create. On the line with us now is Kathy Jacks, who is author of the new memoir, Ribbons of Suds, Mississippi, Memphis, Maine. Hi, Kathy. Tell us why you decided to write a memoir.
Hi, how are you? Yes, I decided because I wanted to, first of all, relive and remember a lot of the experiences and things of my life. I think my life has been somewhat interesting and exciting and challenging, romantic, disappointing, like everybody's life, I guess. But I think from just my formal education, my international travels, my life events, lessons my mom taught me, and my book is dedicated to her, even though she's no longer living. But all those things, I just thought they were interesting to me. I learned a lot. I experienced a lot. And I thought for people who are interested in human nature stories and maybe giving some tidbits and suggestions that might help other people, as well as my opportunity to get to relive my own life a little bit and remember those things, good or bad. And it was hard to put some of those details in there, as people were mentioning, but I've decided this is part of it, so I've got to do it even if people don't approve of it, you know?
Well, Kathy, good luck to you, and thank you for calling in. Kathy Jacks, author of the memoir Ribbons of Suds, Mississippi, Memphis, and Maine. I want to circle back to, gosh, it just popped into my mind. Well, never mind. I'm going to go to a question from the audience. This is from Sam. Sam writes, "The House of My Mother is a great memoir. I'm thinking about writing a memoir, but don't know how to start. The main focus of it is about childhood trauma, and I'm afraid of legal repercussions." Mm-hmm. Alyssa, this comes up a little bit, has come up a little bit already. What does Sam need to think about in terms of legal repercussions?
I think that if Sam is thinking about starting now, I think Sam needs to think about the craft of the memoir itself right now and the story that Sam wants to tell. Because, you know, it's my opinion that when we get so far ahead of ourselves that, you know, we the possibility of becoming paralyzed with fear and never writing it is very much there. It's a problem for a lot of new memoirists. And the thing that I always recommend is write the thing first, write the story first. You don't, you know, you're not obligated to show it to anybody. You're not obligated to publish it. That is, you know, what we were just talking about, writing for oneself. But think about those things, I think, after you have a first draft, after you have that first story written.
Catherine.
I agree with everything Alyssa said. And remember, you're not in this alone, right? You know, assuming that you do find an agent, assuming that you do find a publisher, part of that contract negotiation is going to include things like a libel read, a sensitivity read, fact checking, and increasingly a lot of responsibility, even for creative writers, falls into those purviews as well, too. And that's, again, as Alyssa mentioned, third, fourth, fifth draft type work. I found with Trailed, for instance, having a libel read was an absolutely essential component of that book. And it made me feel a lot more confident about the ground that I was standing on.
It's interesting to me, Kate, because these are the things that come with having your book published by a publisher. A lot of people are self-publishing now, though, and I'm wondering if, frankly, that scares you a little bit.
And I think it's still something to consider, you know, I mean, you know, if you have, say, $2,500, $3,000 that you can spend to have your self-published book read by a libel attorney, it's still money that's really well spent. I think the other thing that's really important to keep in mind is our own subject positions. We're telling our stories, right? And we all know from, you know, having had arguments with friends and loved ones that our version of how things happened may be very, very different from how other people. And so I think owning that and owning that it's our memory and our experience and that it's not an objective truth is also a really important piece of that.
An email here from Carrie. I wonder if they could talk about the fear of writing a memoir and how to overcome it. Have any of the three of you felt afraid and had to overcome it? Okay, everybody's nodding. I'll start with you, Maureen.
I think it's just part of facing, not only facing past issues, especially if it's trauma yourself, but what are people going to think? In memoir, when you put your work out in the world, you know, you're not just criticized for your craft and are you a good writer, but people look at your life and they criticize your actions maybe and what you've chosen to do. So there's sort of a double concern there. But I just want to say again, for the person that was wondering, you know, is worried about writing a memoir, you have to find a way to get those worries out of your head. You have to go back into your experience to a point at which you're re-experiencing it enough to feel those emotions so that you have a very powerful, authentic first draft. And I don't think you can get there if you're constantly thinking, I can't write this because so-and-so is going to be mad. So you've got to get that voice out of your head. You got to say, no one's going to see this. And then you go back and you know, drop down vertically into your life and you re-experience that. I mean, Robert Frost said, no tears for the writer, no tears for the reader. So if you're not, it can be painful to unearth these memories and go back. And when I wrote this book, the very first draft I wrote, I think I just was sobbing at the keyboard every day that I wrote it for the first year that it took to write the the first draft. And then after that, it kind of left my body and I was able to sort of think of it as a writer and an artist. And how do I make this a story that other people want to read? How do I manipulate that text to make it literary? But I think the first thing is to clear your head and just say, I'm just going to go back and relive that. Be prepared to have those same emotions come up that are can be painful as you're recreating and reliving that part of your life if you're writing, say, a trauma memoir.
Alyssa.
Yeah, you know, I think that one of the things that we also have to bear in mind and all writers have to bear in mind is that if you are thinking about, you know, how is this going to be received? What are, you know, what are family members going to think? You know, with or without a libel read, and I have been lucky enough with all of my books to be with publishers who, as just a matter of course, conducted libel reads, and I was, you know, fine in all of them. But how people respond to what we write is a moving target. You know, you could write something about, you know, Aunt Dolores's roast chicken and turn your family upside down without any kind of, you know, intention, without knowing. You know, one of the things that I talk about in Permission is, how do you know when a secret is a secret if no one has told you it's a secret? And what, you know, and what do you do? What do you do then? So it's a moving target. And very often we will think, oh, so-and-so is going to be just irate about this. And they're not, you know. And that's, you know, it's hard to predict. It's really hard to predict.
Yeah, I had an experience where a family member read a short piece, an excerpt of this book quite a few years ago, and were upset that they weren't in it. I was doing everything I could to keep them out of it, to protect their privacy. And they're like, well, we were there and we helped and we did this. And, you know, why aren't we in it? And so that was something I absolutely did not expect. I thought that they would be mad that they were in it. And I did the opposite. So again, as Alyssa said, you cannot tell what the reaction is going to be.
So, Kate, you've just been sitting there smiling as we talk about overcoming fear. It's your turn. Have you had a time when you were afraid of writing something and did it anyway? And do you have any sort of practical tips on how to do that?
Well, you know, one of my favorite books on writing is actually Stephen King's On Writing. And he talks about the ideal reader and the fact that we're basically sort of writing almost a letter to them or having a conversation. And so I think it's really important to consider who your audience is for the memoir, and it may be one particular person or it may be a particular group of people. That incidentally is something that an agent and a publisher is going to ask you to think a whole lot about with your book proposal. But thinking about writing to someone as opposed to writing into the void, I think can be a really helpful exercise as well.
All right. We'll go to Anne, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Anne. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, I want to respond to what all of you have been talking about. I love the word that memoirs matter, that Jennifer, you said. And I liked the word universal. I think universal is what we look for. What are the things, themes in our lives that are universal? And also the ability to be vulnerable, or in fact, the necessity of vulnerability and writing a memoir. Mine will be out in 2 months in the bookstores of Maine, and it's paperback only, published by Pegasus Publishing in Cambridge, UK, and it will only be a paperback. It's a memoir which has been in the making for 15 years or more. I come from a family of wannabe writers, and my grandmother was a feature writer back in the early 20th century.
Anne, what's the name of your memoir?
Out of the Mainstream. And the Maine has the E in parenthesis. Anyway, I wrote it to influence young people. But it's a book which involves a lot of it's a creative nonfiction thing. You know, early childhood in Maine and the influences of place, and a lot of walk-on. If you think of the book as a performance, there are walk-ons by famous people in my life, ranging from, James Baldwin to Jean-Paul Sartre, Bella Abzug, Gloria Steinem, et cetera. I could go on.
Yeah, Anne, thanks so for calling in. Anne's new memoir will be out in a couple months, Out of the Mainstream. Thanks so much for calling in. Let's see, this is going to go back to something you were touching on just a second ago, Kate, an email from Susan. How do you find an agent or publisher? How do you pitch your story? Okay, so we've established that people like to read memoirs from regular people, that you don't have to be a celebrity, but regular people sometimes have a hard time getting a publisher to answer the phone or open the door. Alyssa, what's your advice?
I was a publisher. I was an acquisitions editor at HarperCollins for, it was over a decade in the 90s. And the one thing that I really, really have to make clear is that, you know, just submitting into, as I think, Jennifer, you had described, like the void, is not preferable. You have to have an agent, in my opinion. Because when you think about the thousands and thousands of manuscripts that that editors get every day, used to be like in piles of boxes on my desk, but now everyone sends their submits their manuscripts by email. But agents will help you not only craft the thing that the book needs to be, but the right agent will guide you to the right editor. Not every editor is the right editor for every kind of book. So, you know, you wouldn't necessarily submit a memoir to a science fiction editor. That would be not a great idea. One of the ways I recommend people find agents is go to writers' conferences. There are some great writers' conferences in Maine that happen, I think, throughout the course of the year. Maine Media is a great place to start. Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance is a wonderful place to start. And if you have a particular memoir that you love and that feels like a touchstone to you, go to the acknowledgments page, because odds are the author has thanked the agent in their acknowledgments page.
Good trick. That's wonderful. Before we go to the next break, I'm going to read a few more recommendations here. This is from Chris. Tracy Gran, beloved professor and dean at University of Maine in Bangor and now living in Winterport, has a lovely memoir called, I think it's Sisu, S-I-S-U. It takes us to his life in a Finnish heritage family. The second volume is out, also worth the read, very much so. And then let's see here. Paul has written, I'm only a third of the way through the newly released memoir, The Girl Who Over the Honeysuckle Hedge by Lauren Sangster, but I can't wait to the end. Love Lauren's unique way of writing on such a difficult subject. She makes herself vulnerable by revealing her truth in detail with sensitivity and humor, educating along the way. We're talking about memoirs on Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are talking writing and reading memoirs. Joining me, Maureen Stanton, the author of The Murmur of Everything Moving. Catherine Miles, who's a journalist and author of Trailed, Quakeland, and Superstorm. And Alyssa Altman, author of Permission, The New Memoirist, and The Courage to Create. And we'll go to East Madison and Lisa. Hi, Lisa. Go ahead.
Hi. My question is, if you're writing a memoir and you have a topic, and then as you're writing it, these other huge topics come in, one that the person's too young to add into it, and the other one could be its own memoir. How do you, A, let it influence what you're writing about without it becoming a topic? I don't know how to say that any other way.
Well, Alyssa, you're nodding, so I'm going to let you tackle that question.
Yeah, I think it's a great misconception that, you know, when you have a topic and you sit down and you write you start to write the manuscript or start to write the story, that what is going to emerge at the very end is what you planned at the very beginning. and that's like that for me anyway, that rarely happens. I mean, I wrote my second book and I was through the second draft and I thought, uh-oh, this is not the book that I was planning on writing, and it was not the book that the publisher was planning on publishing. They did it anyway. But what happens is as the story is being written, things change organically. Stories change organically. Other threads emerge. And it's important to follow those threads. And to, you know, George Saunders always talks about listening to the story, listening to the characters, listening to what they have to tell you. And very often, you know, that's what they'll tell you, is that, it, you know, it doesn't want to be the thing that you wanted it to be. It wants to be something else. And it's important to honor that.
All right, Lisa, thanks for your question and good luck to you. Oh, Maureen wants to join. Go ahead, Maureen.
Writing is a process of thinking, and there's always a discovery that happens. Often I don't really know what I'm writing about when I start out. I just have a kind of an obsession or an itch. And as I write, sometimes it's really late, as Alyssa said, you finally say, oh, this is what I'm writing about. So I think you have to be willing to just be really messy in that first draft and let whatever comes up intuitively enter into the draft. And later in the editing process, you can trim it or streamline, or maybe it bifurcates and you actually have two books because you have two big topics. So I think not to worry about that so much and just let that intuitive process of writing lead to those discoveries and see what, you know, what happens with the manuscript, allowing that kind of messiness at first.
All right. Thanks, Lisa, for calling in. We'll go to Sacco and Bob. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Good morning. My question is more of a general question. The book that I have written is not exactly in the genre that you're talking about, but this may be helpful to some of your listeners. I have recently published a book back in October, but it was done through self-publishing. I went through Palmetto Publishing out of South Carolina, and I am wondering, and I'm getting some slow traction on it and this and that, but I'm wondering, is this still something I could show to an agent, and the agent could help me get better traction, or once I get it
published? Sure, Bob. I think it's a good question. And Alyssa, you know, just because someone self-published something doesn't mean that it's not something you can shop around to publishers as well, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, when I was at Harper, very often, I mean, that was really the early days of self-publishing. There's one book that comes to mind that was written by a guy out west. I don't remember the name of it, but he sold, you know, X number of thousands of copies himself. Having self-published it, and then he took it to, I think, Simon & Schuster, Harper, Random House, and with an agent, and the book was published by one of those big publishers, and found a much wider audience. So that is common.
I'm guessing that was a selling point, right? I mean, without a publisher,
yeah,
was able to sell several thousand. The publisher's going to think, boy, with my help and my publicity team, we can really get it out there. Kate.
But let's be honest, that's the exception to the rule, right? And
right,
what I would recommend to people is self-publishing is a great route if what's really important to you is that some people that you love really want to have a copy of your book. I think that's a great idea. I think if publishing with a publisher is your aim, then I would not self-publish. And what I would really recommend that folks do long before they pitch their work to an agent or to an editor is to cut out some standalone sections as essays and work on publishing those in literary journals and magazines. A lot of times that's how agents will find you. And I think it's also a proof of concept that shows that you're on the right track, that you've got the sort of stylistic chops and that your story coheres in a way that's going to resonate with folks.
And Maureen.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that, you know, we're talking a lot about the big publishers, the big five, and it's getting more and more difficult to actually get your book published that way. But there are some really excellent independent and university presses. So for example, University of Nebraska has an American Live series, and they publish really wonderful, well-written memoirs. And they do a pretty good job with promoting them. And so Tin House and Milkweed and Grey Wolf, there's lots of good smaller independent or university presses really looking at memoir and creative nonfiction.
Great advice.
Yeah, no, I was just going to chime in and my first three books were published by big publishers, the big five publishers. And Permission was published by a small, wonderful, independent literary press that's been around for a long time. The experience for me was very, very different. I doubt that I'm going to go back My agent probably is screaming right now, but I doubt that I'm going to go back. But to Maureen's point, there are some wonderful independent, smaller independent publishers out there.
All right. Thanks, Bob, for your question. Let's see. We're going to go to Maura calling from Portland. Hi, Maura. Go ahead.
Hi. I really enjoyed the show. Thanks for all the speakers. I was wondering if there were any local resources or writing groups or workshops that we could attend or participate in order to get this memoir writing journey started, getting a little bit of a framework, and then that idea of group support to just get started.
Well, Maura, calling from Portland, Maine, I'm pretty certain the answer is yes. Catherine, go ahead.
I just want to make a huge plug for the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance, which is one of the best in the absolute world. I think, Maureen and Alyssa probably have taught some courses for them. I certainly really value every opportunity I have to teach for them. They do one-time courses on, say, a Saturday, six-week courses. The Black Fly Summer Writing Retreat is coming up in May. They also have monthly meetings called Gather. And for me, there is no better place than something like that. They're also really wonderful regional groups up here in the Midcoast where I live. Waterfall Arts offers writing courses as well. And I agree so much with what she said, this importance of community and finding folks who can read drafts, who you feel comfortable offering critique to, is such an invaluable part of the process.
Mm, yeah. And for those of you who don't know, the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance, Kate, is really unusual. It's not as though every state has an organization like that helping writers.
No, seriously, it's just the best in the best business and such a supportive, wonderful place, really talented folks. And if you're not yet a member, I hope everybody will consider becoming one.
Yeah, it's such a great organization. I'm actually in the middle of teaching an 8-week course there right now. And they have been, they're just remarkable. I mean, I've been teaching for them for a while, and it is a community. It's like a small village unto itself, and just wonderful people. They attract great students at every level in every genre.
All right. Well, Maura, good luck to you. Yeah. I want to go to Louisa, who posted this on Facebook. Glad to hear "so what" mentioned regarding memoir. I used to teach 6th and 7th grade language arts, and I taught memoir in reading and writing workshop. I always said it's not just something remembered. It's what it meant, how it mattered. So, Louisa, thank you for that. Anybody want to follow up on what Louisa said?
Yeah, I would say that there's a mistaken idea that memoir is just reciting the events that happened, just recording, the experience you had. But I think what readers of memoir really want to see is the writer engaging with that experience and trying to figure out, well, why did I make those choices? What really happened? What sort of meaning can I get out of this? And that's that reflective layer, that double consciousness that Catherine was talking about. It's really, she's absolutely right. It's not just reciting. There are exceptions, witness narratives, like the Holocaust narratives, really just, writing that into history is important. And the idea of reflection there is not necessarily useful, but for most memoirs of ordinary people, really you have to bridge that gap and make it more interesting to other people. The sort of who cares about your story is a big issue to deal with and you can deal with it in the craft of writing, just knowing the craft.
We'll go to Colleen, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Colleen, go ahead.
Hi, I was calling, I'm a licensed clinical professional counselor, but I did my undergrad in creative writing in English. And that's actually how I came to become a therapist, because I took a memoir class and realized how cathartic it could be, and started studying about like therapeutic memoir. And I just wanted to say, I know this is mostly about getting published and doing this in a professional way, but even for folks that are just wanting to write their memoir for themselves, I know some of the people that you're talking with today have spoken about the process of writing out your story and then turning it into something that's beautiful. And that can be such a therapeutic process for people to retell their story and then find power in finding it something creative and artistic. And I just wanted to share that that's something you can do even if you're not planning on getting published.
Yeah, and Colleen, thank you so much. And Kate, I know that you've taught a lot of classes. I'm guessing many of your students had that experience that Colleen's talking about.
And I really liked what she said about this idea about beauty. And I think the artistry of that is really important. One of my very favorite memoirs is Maggie Smith's You Could Make This Place Beautiful. And Maggie Smith was originally a poet. And I think, you know, structurally what she's doing with her book is again, making art. And I think that we really can do that. And as Colleen mentioned, when we do that with our own stories, when we transform them into something that is really lovely, I think that that's very empowering and can do a lot of good for a lot of people.
All right, Colleen, thanks for your call. Polly wrote an email. How does writing stories based on research on ancestry fit into memoir writing? I have found interesting ones in this process that fit into stories. I had known my dad had left high school as a teen and found out why, a fire that took out his high school, and a girlfriend convinced him to go back. A recent book, I Am Nobody's Slave by Lee Hawkins, was both a memoir and historical work and so impactful, dedicated to his father who confronted about physical trauma. So is that a memoir if you're writing the story of somebody else, Maureen?
I think if it's your father, your family, absolutely, it's a personal story. You're researching some research I did on my grandmother, for example. That's part of our family and part of our family story. But the writer is always in there. The writer, if you, when you're writing this, either through the style of writing or what you choose to include, even if you're not a major part of that story, the writer is in the story. It is a work of memoir, I would say.
An email from Bill. Oh yeah, go ahead, Alyssa. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna add that, you know, when you use something like ancestry, or you've discovered family history, and you want to do research, you have to think about what is the core of the story. And the core of the story, I think, has to be in some way connected to you, the narrator, and certainly, you know, your point of view. And what I have found works well for some people is the idea of wrapping the stories of others around the core and thinking of it that way as you write it.
An email from Bill. A valued memoir does not have to be published for public consumption. Some years ago, a cousin encouraged our aunts, uncles, and parents to write their own memoirs. Each wrote several pages of their life, which were compiled and distributed. What a fabulous blessing to our family. We learned so much. We just have a couple minutes left, and I wanted to carve out some time for you all to talk about your own favorite memoirs. And I'll go from this email. Deb writes, novelist Jacqueline Winspear wrote a really enjoyable memoir titled This Time Next Year We'll Be Laughing. So there's a recommendation to kick us off. Maureen, do you have a favorite?
I have so many favorites, but one that I want to call out is called Barbarian Days by William Finnegan, who's a New Yorker writer. And the reason I love this memoir is because it takes me to a place I will never go or have been, and that is a big wave surfer. And I had no prior interest in big wave surfing, but when I read a piece in the New Yorker and then got his book, I felt so immersed in that challenge. And the universal story of that is this idea to sort of be personal best, to chase a dream down. I think everyone can relate to that, even though the particulars are quite different. But he's a wonderful writer. It's very immersive. You know, you don't have to go out and risk your life. You can just read him about him risking his life to understand what it's like to be a big wave surfer. It's just a really wonderful book.
Catherine Miles.
I'm really interested in those memoirs that are taking on really big issues that are going beyond the personal story. And so two of my very favorites are Carolyn Forche's What You Have Heard Is True, which is about being in El Salvador, and Lacey Crawford's Notes on a Silencing, which was about being sexually assaulted at a New England boarding school and the subsequent cover-up.
Okay, Alyssa, 30 seconds left. What is your recommendation?
Yeah, Gail Caldwell's Let's Take the Long Way Home. Gail Caldwell was formerly the book editor of the Boston Globe, and it is a memoir about her friendship with Caroline Knapp, who wrote a book called Drinking, a Love Story back in the 90s. And it is just a beautiful, poetic, linear, layered look at a platonic friendship between two women. And it's just a stunning, stunning narrative.
Well, thank you all so much for spending the hour with us. Alyssa Altman, the author of Permission, The New Memoirist, and The Courage to Create. Kate Miles, a journalist and author whose most recent book is Trailed. And Maureen Stanton, the author of The Murmur of Everything Moving. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.